TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Score North Live with Matthew Coller.
Driven to deep right center field. That ball is back and gone. Sano to the opposite field, and the Twins take a 3-1 lead.
Well, a very nice win for the Minnesota Twins last night. No, they did not score 18 runs, but they did it with good pitching, great relief pitching, and a home run from Miguel Sano. And last night, Jonathan, I didn't get any tweets last night from anybody. I was disappointed.
Was it because it was so late?
Yes. Yeah, I think that that's probably exactly what it was, that I did not get the, look how wrong you were about Sano. Didn't get any of that. Through five games, he is hitting 190 with two home runs, which is about my expectation for Miguel Sano, really.
He's got two home runs. How many in the strikeout column?
He has nine strikeouts.
Ah, and so sticking with the pace.
Two home runs. But last night was a big one, and I will admit this to you, Jonathan. Miguel Sano came back at the right time because Nelson Cruz is hurt. Mm-hmm. If Nelson Cruz was still healthy and he wasn't playing because they were forcing Sano into the lineup, then I would be annoyed. Like, oh, okay, you're right, doing it because of his name and not because he's the best guy for the job. But at this point, with a couple people on the shelf, he's the best guy for the job. And he comes up with a big home run last night. So the Twins get another victory. Derek Wetmore of Score North Twins Show is first place Twins.
The Score North First Place Twins Show.
Is in the studio for our first segment here. And Derek, I was looking through the stats as we close in on Memorial Day. That's the big time where you decide, all right, is this for real? Is this team for real? Are these players for real having great seasons, or does it look like a mirage? And I want to go through a few guys with you here, because the number of players on this team who are having career years or league best type of seasons is a lot all at the same time, which in some cases can mean that you're just going to have a great season and this is how it's going to work out for you this year. And in other cases, it can be like, okay, this is a bad sign, actually, because this is how you had to get to this point, was everyone having these career years and you're set to fall off. So I want to go through these for which guys are actually what their stats are showing early on. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to hit this batting average, this OPS, but just they're this good or it's likely to fall off. And the place I want to start is with Jorge Polanco. We've spent so much time on Byron Buxton, rightfully so, because of his status within the organization for years and him finally starting to reach his peak and look like he's going to stay there, that we have ignored how excellent Jorge Polanco has been this year. 400 on base percentage, 992 OPS. His WAR is almost 3 already.
Crazy.
Eight home runs from the shortstop position, which is a ton. Not striking out all over the place by any means. Is Jorge Polanco just a star MLB player now, or is this going to fade back a bit?
I think he's a very good MLB player, but I don't think he's a superstar. So I hate to sound, you know, like rain on your parade kind of thing, but Jorge Polanco is a huge part of the future. He's a big part of the core. The Twins signed on to him for the next 5 years, and I think they fully expect him to be one of their top 3-4 hitters for the length of that contract. Like, he's just coming into his prime. He does a lot of things really well. The switch hit, the bat to ball, he's hitting line drives. He hit another screamer yesterday that was caught for an out. So for every little dribbler that he gets and is a base hit, he's not cheating his way into this batting line. He's legitimately been excellent. Is he one of the top five players in baseball? Like, I'll probably stop short of saying that, but he's been legitimately very good, and I expect that to continue.
So what should we expect from him? Right now he's hitting .335, which seems like a lot, and 400 on base percentage for a guy with only some power. He has five triples already.
Yeah.
you do not expect five more triples as we go throughout the summer. I mean, right now he's played 45 games, and first, it's great to have someone who has been healthy like that, and the roster has largely been healthy outside of recently with Mitch Garver and Nelson Cruz. So having him in the lineup as opposed to what they had to deal with last year with his suspension has been a big deal. I just have a tough time seeing him being a 1,000 OPS guy and projecting it out, hitting over 20 home runs and 20 triples. Was it Curtis Granderson who did that one year? 20 homers, 20 triples.
Love it.
I have a really tough time seeing that from Jorge Polanco, but we think he's going to be good. So what's reasonable for him for a final stat line?
I do think he's capable of hitting 300. I do think he's capable of that 350 on base. And from a shortstop, that's like, that catches your eye
really
a little
good,
bit.
Yeah.
That power, it's to me, I've always thought Jorge Polanco had extra base power. I thought he's kind of one of those guys, stick it in the gap, and he's fast. He'll run to second. He'll run to third. The cycle, to me, earlier this season, it's not that surprising because that's kind of who he is. Is it 8 home runs that he's on right now, though? That's surprising to me. That did not cross my mind as, this Twins team is going to go jump out in front of all of baseball, be the best home running hitting team in the league, mm-hmm. and Jorge Polanco is going to be a big reason why.
Right.
I try to spend time thinking about what are the possibilities, what are the range of outcomes that could happen for this season. So far, the power that we've seen from Jorge Polanco was not exactly on my radar. So it's been more like pleasant surprise than I expect this guy to go be a 40 home run hitter.
If you want to weigh in, 651-646-8255 on Twins that you think are going to keep it up, Twins that you think might not be able to stay at this rate they are right now with the Twins being at the top of Major League Baseball. All right, next guy on my list is CJ Crone. Recently, he's just gone bananas and been super hot. He's crushing the ball. He's not just hitting homers. He's hitting 450-foot homers. But we know guys like CJ Crone, and Miguel Sano is one of them, that swing through a lot of pitches. They get hot and cold. They see ups and downs. His downs earlier this year, his hot streak this year. He's got 12 home runs in 43 games. I mean, what's reasonable for CJ Crone for home runs for a season? I mean, right now, if you're playing the on-pace game, that's close to a 40 home run season. And that seems like a lot to ask of CJ Crone.
We're always playing the on pace game.
Of course.
We're having fun with that every single day.
People get shamed for that. Like, they'll get shamed for the on pace game. The on pace game's the best.
That's right. It's fun. It's sports. Like, I don't get when, you wouldn't do the same thing in the NFL. So, like, a guy has 100 receiving yards in a game, and you're gonna say, like, oh, this is good for his chance to get to 1,000 or 1,300. Like, no one would be like, you're talking about that after one game. So come on, after 7 weeks, we can start talking about this. The Twins are one of the best offenses in baseball. They might hit 300 home runs this year. These are things, and you know me, I'm as reserved and, you know, try to stay down the middle as anybody. This is to the point of a season where you can start talking and looking at the pace and saying, not necessarily for an individual guy, but for a club, this is looking really, really promising. To answer your question on Crone, I don't think he's going to hit 40, but I'll be surprised if he doesn't hit 30. He hit 30 last year with the Rays in his one season in Tampa, and then he was cut for financial reasons, I'm sure, and winds up in Minnesota. They were betting on him. They say, yeah, I think he's a better player than what his salary's going to be, and he's proven it. I don't think what he's doing is crazy outside of the norm for him. I think this is who CJ Crone is, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he keeps this batting lineup for a full season.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the guys on this list that the front office has to just be jumping for joy. I mean, I tweeted the Anchorman GIF the other day of, like, you know, all the anchors jumping up at the same time. Oh. Like, this is the Twins front office. but this is what it, I mean, they must feel like this when Jonathan Scope hits 8 bombs so far and CJ Crone, almost everything they've done this season, as opposed to last year, has been a hit. And I don't see why CJ Crone is going to slow down. I just think that there will be times where you grow frustrated with him.
Sure.
Because he's in a big slump and you're going, okay, his batting average is dipping down to 230 or something. Is he not going to bounce back? And then he'll get hot again. You kind of know what you have with CJ Crone is the way I look at it.
I think I'm looking at his career batting average on base and slugging right now. I mean, it's not that far off.
Yeah.
This is who he's been in his career with the Angels and then with the Rays. Career batting average 260. Right now he's hitting 263. Career on base 312. Right now 325. The power is quite a bit more than what he's experienced so far in his career. But last year really was his first big home run power season because he was playing behind Albert Pujols.
And they started juicing the baseballs last year.
That also probably is a thing that might have allegedly happened according to some people.
It is hard to look at career stats and then compare them to what players are going to do this year. Because, I mean, this even goes for Miguel Sano. Like, okay, do we compare his power before or juiced ball power? Because it's clear from the people who have looked into this and studied the baseballs that there is something different about these baseballs that is flying farther. Now, whether that's intentional or not intentional, that's what's happening factually. Like aerophysicist people or whatever have looked at these things and said, yep, it's a little bit different. It's spinning different. It's flying farther.
Aerophysics.
And whatever. I don't know what it's called. Aerospace engineering economics?
Maybe.
Something?
Yeah, something like that.
Smart people have looked at this and have studied it scientifically and found that it's different. And then they send these baseballs to AAA. All of a sudden, the AAA baseballs are flying out of the park. Like, this is what's going on. So when you look back a few years at home run totals, there's a time where I think Nelson Cruz led baseball with like 38, and there's going to be a ton of people who hit 30 plus this year.
Yeah.
So I only to get to the point that I expect CJ Cron to stay at this rate and hit a bunch of home runs because that's who he is in the ball flies very far era.
Yeah, we did on the Friday episode of Score North Twins, we call it Five Thoughts, and we did the five guys we think will be leading the Twins in home runs at the end of the year. You can steal the bit if you need to kill a segment someday. It's a fun, it was fun. We had fun with it. CJ Cron was my fifth. They both, Manny Hill and Rami Makhlouf picked him. I think they took him second on the Twins. I picked him fifth. I kind of painted myself into a corner because then I had to come up with five guys who were going to hit more than him. But 30 home runs to me was like the starting point of the conversation.
Who did you have is hitting more?
we had a little fun with it.
So Rosario is one.
Rosario, Nelson Cruz, trying to off the top of my head.
I don't know how much Nelson Cruz is going to play. Like now, this could entirely depend on Miguel Sano, and if he keeps striking out at this rate, it's going to be tougher for him to get in the lineup on a team that wants to win, but I think that they will push him into the lineup a lot, so that makes it harder on Nelson Cruz because the guy can't play the outfield. He has to be a DH.
No, but I think you start with Nelson Cruz. Like, I think he's one of the first guys you write on the lineup card every night when he's healthy.
Sure, if you're playing against the National League, sure, he can't play. If he's dinged up because he's just old, then
that's fair.
Know, things are going to happen. I wouldn't put his home run total high. Now, it's a home run of a signing. Am I right? And you could end up with 20-something home runs from
that's
him
bad.
And feel, I know, really good. But you can feel really good about that signing because you got power.
Sure.
But maybe he only plays 100 games this year.
Yeah.
And so he's not going to hit more home runs than CJ Cron, who's going to play 130 games.
I don't know. I think Cruz plays more than that if he comes back in reasonable time. And the word I heard from the Twins the other day was that he's going to be back Friday when they return home for a homestand. So Nelson Cruz, this won't be an extended absence, but what you worry about, and I only worry about this because I do enough radio shows with our mutual friend Judd Zolgad that I have to be worried about what's going to go wrong
Judd
next.
Judd worries about everything.
He's worried, and rightfully so, I think, that wrist injuries for power hitters, scary thing.
Yep.
How long does that linger? Does that affect his swing going forward? Does it sap any of his power? That's going to be something to watch. But Nelson Cruz, I think, is going to be in the top five for this Twins team in home runs. I think he's going to help carry them up to or past that 300 mark as a team. Who else did I put? Oh, I put Mitch Garver in front of him, but that was kind of just a for funsies pick because I expect Garver will be back before too terribly long, and he just was hitting like peak Barry Bonds in catcher's gear when he was playing. It was like putting Mike Piazza to shame. Buster Posey with power. And how quickly does he return to that form? Hard to say, but if he does, he's an impressive hitter and could get to 32. Yeah,
that's why I didn't bring him into the conversation, because it's obvious he's not going to continue to be Barry Bonds that he was for this short period of time.
How
dare you?
Yeah,
I know, right? Let me ask you kind of one more, but I'll combine it.
Okay.
The Odorizzi Perez and the back half of the bullpen. I mean, how much longer does this continue? Because the bullpen last night was fantastic, as it has been. And there are guys that I had never heard of before this year who have one ERAs.
You and me both.
Blake Parker. I mean, who is that? Ryan Harper. Who are these guys?
Right.
And they have one ERAs, which happens a lot with relievers. It's very hard to predict, and sometimes you just roll the right dice, and they have two ERAs for a season. But I never really gamble on that, especially when it's guys who aren't throwing 120 miles an hour. So I guess the pitching would be a better way to ask it. How much longer does Odorizzi, Perez, the bullpen. How much longer does this hold up?
Starting pitching is harder to say that they'll keep going like this. I'm looking at Jake Odorizzi's got a 2.38 ERA. Martin Perez, who we all accused you of signing off the scrap heap for hopeful rotation depth, maybe he's your sixth guy out there. Oh, he's just posting a 2.89 ERA in 53 innings so far this year. Both of those guys have an outside chance to get to 20 wins, Matthew. If you would have said, hey, there's going to be a 20-game winner on this staff, I think we all would have said, okay, sounds good. Jose Berríos.
Yeah.
Of course, he's going to win 20 games. He's a good pitcher on a good team. But when you've got three guys that are kind of vying for that, it gets interesting. And I don't think they're going to pitch sub-3 ERAs all season, so I'll say that won't continue. But I do think they've legitimately found three rotation pieces in those three names we just mentioned. And then that back end of the bullpen, I believe in it. I believe in Blake Parker and his splitter when it's on and he's throwing strikes. I believe in Taylor Rogers as one of the best relievers in baseball. Now, if you can kind of figure out that bridge to them or that third, fourth, fifth spot in the bullpen and really solidify that, now you're talking. Now you've actually got something here. I like where they're starting. I still think that they have a way to go before they're like a championship bullpen.
Yeah, if Felvey and Levine weren't known as the pitching guys and this wasn't their MO of getting more out of pitchers than they're supposed to, then I would say this is fake and these guys are going to fall apart soon. But now I don't tend to think that. So good stuff, Derek.
Thank you, Matthew.
To the Score North Twins show. Download it wherever you get your podcasts. And download our app where there's stuff as well, including your five thoughts column. So lots from Derek and us on the Twins. We're going to take a quick break. Going to pivot over to basketball. John Krasinski was there at Ryan Saunders' introductory press conference. Lots to talk with John about when we come back. Here you're listening to Score North Live.
Lastly, I need to recognize someone who's unable to be here in the physical form. But I know he's here. And he's looking down, and I know he'd say that there's no place else he'd rather have me get my start in coaching. So I want to make sure I acknowledge my dad, Cliff, and just thank him for putting me in this.
All right, welcome back into Score North Live. Matthew Collar here. Ryan Saunders introduced as the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, joining us to discuss from The Athletic. John Krasinski, what's up, Johnny? How are you?
Collar, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, just getting ready for OTAs and football. We've got some baseball.
It's football.
Basketball finds its way to the headlines here. So yesterday, John, I talked a lot about Ryan Saunders and some of the concerns that you would have about this. And it starts with, did Glenn Taylor pick Ryan Saunders as his coach before hiring a president of basketball operations? And I think it's a very fair thing to think, knowing the background and how Glenn Taylor has run his team. So can you tell us about the background of the hiring of Ryan Saunders?
Yeah, I think it's natural, obviously, for everyone to kind of assume that this was the way it was going to be all along, that, you know, that one of the preconditions that Gerson Rosas had for taking the position was to keep Ryan Saunders, and considering how the process ended up, I understand the skepticism. There's you can kind of look at all of those things that are in place and say, wait a minute here, what really happened? And I really do think it was interesting today that Gerson Rosas opened his press conference with a 7-minute explainer on the process, on kind of how he came to choose Ryan Saunders, and was really forceful in saying that, look, you know, I understand that people believe that I had a mandate, but there was none. And I can just tell you that in the reporting that I've done on it, I do believe that if Gerson Rosas at the end of this search really truly believed that the best candidate for the position was someone else, I think Glenn Taylor would have signed off on that. But I do think that one thing that is factored in here is that Ryan Saunders has an unbelievable amount of support inside this organization, from the players, from the owner, from people on the business side, from all sorts of entities in here. And that's a compelling argument. It's not just that his last name is Saunders and or anything like that, but I can see why Gerson, having gone through this, having seen how important Ryan is in the players' eyes, in a lot of people's eyes. He said, you know, look, I think that this guy can lead this organization and lead this basketball team. And so that's what he did.
Now, it seemed to me, John, like Saunders left a really strong impression on those players. And they knew who he was and they had worked with him and everything else. But there's a difference between being the assistant and being the guy as the head coach. And they didn't have the greatest record down the stretch. But at the end of the season, when Carl Anthony Towns came out and kind of made his statement in support of Ryan Saunders, I just thought, and you and I hear a lot of BS doing our reporting, that that was not BS. It just came across as heartfelt from Carl Anthony Towns that he really wanted Ryan Saunders to be the guy. How important do you think that was in the process that Carl Anthony Towns and Saunders have a very close relationship?
Yeah, I do think that's important. And you always want to be careful, caller, when you're talking about do you grant a superstar's wish? Do you capitulate to that star or, you know, something like that? You don't want to do that. You don't want to go that far. But I think you certainly want to get a feel for what your most important players think, and especially in this day and age. And so relationships are important in this league, more important than they've ever been. And Ryan has really good ones with Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, the two most important players on this roster. And so we talked to both of them today after the press conference, and both were effusive in their praise. And I do think that's genuine. I don't think they're just saying this because this is the coach that they have. I think they genuinely believe in Ryan and they want to play for him. Now, what has to happen for this to make to be a success is Ryan has to use that equity that he's built up with these guys and use that as leverage to get more out of them, especially Wiggins. I mean, you know, it's not going to do anybody any good if the players just say, oh man, he's a really nice guy and he's really cool and he plays music at practice and stuff. And then they go out and don't improve, you know, and then they go out and they don't perform on the court. He'll get fired. Like that's the way that it will end. And so there's got to be both some player accountability, but then Ryan has got to be able to leverage the goodwill that he has into something of tangible effect on the court. And we'll see if that is going to happen or not.
Talking with John Krasinski, he covers the Minnesota Timberwolves for The Athletic. Ryan Saunders introduced today officially as the head coach of the Timberwolves. And that came to mind for me talking about it yesterday, John, is, I mean, how much power does Ryan Saunders have to do things that maybe wouldn't be entirely popular with those players? I mean, the best example that I could come up with is if Andrew Wiggins in the first quarter of a basketball game takes two straight 18-foot fadeaway jumpers and doinks them off the back rim, can Ryan Saunders say, I'm sorry, man, you're not playing the rest of the game, because we talked about this all week of not doing that. And, I mean, does he have the authority to do that? And I guess that goes along with the question of how much of the strings are being pulled from upstairs for how they play and how much control does Saunders have himself to be kind of separate from that?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a couple things there, Collar. I think one is, I think he will have more authority now that he's the full-time head coach with a multi-year contract and not an interim and not just really trying to do whatever he can to get the job. So he'll have that going for him. But also, this is where the entire organization comes in. And it came up at the press conference. This is where if they have problems with Wiggins or with any player, in terms of effort, in terms of the approach, in terms of all of that, one, Ryan has to be able to have the authority and have the temerity to be able to crack down and to hold someone accountable and to bench a player or to discipline them some way and somehow. And so that's one. Two is they plan to and they have to surround him with great assistant coaches who are also able to help in that regard and deliver strong messages and set an example for players and make sure that they let every player know when things are not going right and when they're not doing the right things, there are consequences for that. And then three, Gerson Rosas has to have a strong voice as well as the president, the guy who is running this whole show. And there has to be blatant and open and honest and frank conversations about expectations with all players, and it has to be a sense of this is an entire group that is all together and all doing it the same and all having the same message. And so if Ryan isn't, say, the chair-throwing taskmaster that's going to strike fear into some player's heart, that's okay. He doesn't have to be if they have other people in other roles that can sort of, you know, can help him in that area. And so it's not just about what Ryan can do, but it's about what this entire basketball operations department can do to make sure that, that these guys get the message.
So on that topic, I feel like we won't really know how that's all going to work until it's actually in progress. And John, I feel right. the same way about what it's going to look like on the floor, because last year, you were talking about taking over for Tibbs, so the team has been learning everything from Tibbs for a couple of years, and then now, you know, Ryan's got to come in and try to tweak some things, but you can't overhaul when you've just taken over for a head coach. Now they've got the opportunity to schematically overhaul offense and defense. Do you have any sense for how that's going to look next year?
Well, I mean, you know, they're saying things. I mean, they're saying they want to play with more pace. They're saying they want to shoot more threes. They're saying they want to be kind of a more fluid, quote-unquote, modern offense and a defense that switches more, a defense that is a little more athletic, all of those things. But you're right in terms of they are all sort of buzzwords right now, and they're all talk until you see what kind of changes are made to the roster. And that, you know, any changes that they make will give us a little bit of a sign about what's being prioritized and what isn't. And then what happens when they get on the floor and actually do things. I mean, Ryan, when he took over, said he wanted to play with more pace. He said he wanted to shoot more threes. They ended up playing slower and shooting fewer threes than they did under Tibbs. And part of that was the injuries that he had to deal with. But, I mean, that's just the nature of it. And so, you know, you know this, caller. I mean, we go through all of these press conferences all the time, and everyone says the right things, and it's a very rare where you walk out of one of these introductory press conferences and say, boy, you know, this ain't going to work, or, you know, they really missed the mark. I mean, everyone knows kind of what to say initially in these things, but it's about being able to implement and execute these things, and that's what the Tibbs regime struggled with in 3 years, and that's why they're out the door, and we have new ones coming in, and it is frustrating because you're just like, well, we got to wait and see, but and every answer to every question can't be, well, we'll have to wait and see, but there is that element in it right now that it is all talk right now, and until we get action that proves this organization is going in a different direction, there's going to be understandable skepticism surrounding it.
I was thinking about this a lot when I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast, and he was interviewing Stan Van Gundy. It was a great inside basketball look from a head coach, and Stan Van Gundy wasn't dumbing it down. And he was going into depth about the Bucks and how the Bucks gave up a ton of three-pointers this year, but they protected the rim extremely well, and they didn't foul. And this is the thing about, you're mentioning, they say all the right things, but all the right things put together at the same time is almost impossible unless Kevin Durant comes to your team. So right. with this roster, John, how do you see it playing out? I mean, sometimes, just an example with Jimmy here, they didn't shoot the most threes, but the offense actually scored a lot of points
right.
that year. And I think actually Tibbs did a lot of things right on how he strategized offensively. Just they weren't the things that people say you should do in 2019 entirely, but the results were good. So how do they adapt to some things that are modern, but also some things that just fit what they have in terms of the roster?
Yeah, and Rosas has talked about this a little bit in terms of, you know, he's asked a lot since he came from Houston, are you going to shoot 53s in a game and all these things? And he's like, no, we can't do that. We can't be just Houston North because we don't have the roster to support that. So what their plan is to build a team or build a philosophy and a system that fits their players. And so there's going to be this team, no matter what changes are made, they're not going to turn into the Trailblazers with Dame and McCollum or the Rockets or, you know, these teams that chuck just tons of threes and win that way. As you said, Tibbs was able to get this offense into the top 10, I think into the top 8 without doing that a lot. What they have to do is make improvements defensively to do that. And they'll have to make some roster tweaks. And really over the next couple of seasons, you will probably see it gravitate more and more to a team that is more capable of shooting a lot of threes, more capable of switching a lot on defense. But it is going to take some time to implement that. So in the interim, you sort of have to be able to be adaptable to what your roster is. And I think that was the problem with Tibbs defensively is, you know, he did a fine job with that offensively, but defensively he had his system that he wanted to deploy and he didn't have the guys to do it. And instead of accounting for that and tweaking it, he just said, no, you guys have to learn how to do this and this is how we're going to be successful. And that didn't work. And so that's going to be their challenge for Rosas and Saunders is to come up with sort of a hybrid until they can get maybe in year two and year three more change to the roster to really support whatever their long-term vision is for how they want to play here.
Hey, John, last thing for you. How are you feeling about the Warriors right now? I got to tell you, man, Durant goes out and all of a sudden I'm back. Like, yeah, go Warriors. This is awesome. And yeah. Steph Curry scored more points in a sweep than any other player ever has scored in a sweep. And it was so much freaking fun to watch. I feel like a bad person for wanting Durant to just stay on the sideline, but it's too much fun to watch for me, John.
No, I get it, caller. And that's always been my problem with the Durant move to the Warriors was that team didn't need him. And so that was why I was always disappointed. Obviously any player can move wherever they want and do it. And the Warriors, credit to them, created a culture and environment and a winning program that made Durant want to go there. But it just was not as fun to watch. A, because the style was a little different with Durant there, but B, because they were just so freaking good that it's like, well, where's the spontaneity? Where's the unpredictability? Where's all of this? And at least without Durant now, the Warriors had been challenged and they had been pushed and they had to play that wide open, sling it around and shoot threes and style that everyone kind of fell in love with before Durant came there. And they really became more of an evil empire. And so, I can't wait for this summer when he leaves, presumably. I think it would be maybe the worst thing for the NBA ever if he for some reason stays.
And I agree.
I just want to see them get back to that. I want to see them get back to Steph and Clay and Draymond, go for it. And then KD, go be awesome and brilliant and amazing where, you know, in another place and like you were with the Thunder and let's have some fun and have some competition for once.
It's so weird that this can be a thing that works for championships, and yet all of us watching are like, nah, it didn't really work, you know?
Yeah.
Just like, because it slowed them down and made them less fun, and it just didn't really work. So,
KD was Finals MVP, so it's not like it's not like he was terrible or anything. No, they've been great with him. It's just, it is more fun to watch now.
For sure. Awesome stuff as always. John Krasinski, follow him on Twitter and his work at The Athletic. We will talk to you again soon, John. Maybe football next time. It's football season, man. OTAs.
We got to get in there, man. I can't wait to get out there and break it all down with you.
All right, John. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
I can, but that's okay.
All right, of course. John Krasinski of The Athletic. Secretly a football guy, John Krasinski. He covers basketball, but we know football is deep in his heart. Like it is for everyone. Jonathan, you found, oh, by the way, real quick on that, OTAs starting. Yeah. The Vikings must have had me in mind. They tweeted out a video.
Oh, you mean this one?
Yes. Yes.
See, I know you.
They had the dummies and the thing that they, what do they call it? The sled.
Yeah.
And there's popping of the sled.
Mm-hmm.
And did you hear the, like, yelling in the background?
It's football.
It's football, man. But you found a trade idea from MLB.com. Very interesting for the Twins. I don't know if I like it or not. We'll talk about, I'll decide in the break whether I like it or not. And then we'll discuss that when we come back. If you want to chime in on the hiring of Ryan Saunders or whether the Twins are going to keep rolling the way that they have, 651-646-8255 from the TCL Broadcast Studios. We will be back on Score North Live.
And Parker makes a nice play to end the game. And the Twins bounce back again after a loss yesterday. This team is now 16-3 after a loss.
It has really been incredible. I mean, almost every day you walk in here after a Twins win or taking 3 out of 4, whatever it might be, and just look at the numbers they've put up, where they sit in the standings, and you just go, man, this is something. I mean, it has been a long time since the Minnesota Twins were dangerous. They were in the playoffs just 2 years ago, but kind of had to get hot toward the end. They get in with 85 wins, which is like the ultimate kind of meh playoff appearance. And they never felt like a World Series team. They never felt super dangerous, but now they do. And almost every night that you turn on the game, your expectation is that the Twins are going to win. And this is very bizarre. Jonathan, when was the last time, I might even want to say, for a Minnesota sports team outside of 2017 Vikings, you would have had 2009 Vikings were like this. It's very rare even for a Minnesota sports team to where you turn on the TV and your expectation is that you won't be disappointed. They're going to win tonight.
Was it the KG, Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell Wolves?
There was a little bit with the Jimmy Wolves. They went on like a 50-something win pace with Jimmy, but then he got hurt and they started to fell off.
Was it the mid-2000s Twins? Does it go back that far?
I think it really does, to where you're actually talking about they're going to win tonight. There's almost no question. Yeah. If they're playing a team that's inferior, which is a lot of teams, you're like, yeah, they're Angels. Yeah, they're going to beat the Angels. They're going to beat the Mariners. Yeah.
I would argue not the Twins, though, because you always had that fear when it came to the Yankees. But when it came,
it still exists.
But when it was the 09 Vikings, and then when it was that Wolves team with KG, Latrell, and then Sam Cassell, they didn't really have that fear when it went up against anybody.
Right. Yeah.
You thought, they can beat legitimately anybody. And if Sam Cassell wasn't injured, they're probably beating LA.
And if Favre didn't throw back Cross's body and the Saints didn't try to commit a homicide on a football field, maybe we would have been talking about several a Super homicides. Bowl appearance. But you're right about every one of those games that you went into. As a Vikings fan, you would have been watching in 09 thinking, like, yeah, they're going to win. I mean, there's no question from week to week. In 2017, I don't think it was quite that feeling. It was more like, is this the week that the wheels fall off?
Yeah.
Is this where something goes horribly wrong?
You always felt watching, you're like, okay, so how do they win today? What weird thing is going to happen that they're going to win today?
Yeah,
throw is Case Keenum going to do?
they're going to win because the other team just isn't that good. They had a schedule with the Bears twice with rookie Mitch Trubisky and John Fox still coaching. Aaron Rodgers is out, so they go to Green Bay with, what was it, DeShone Kizer as the starting quarterback, or Brett Hundley? Brett Hundley, but they faced DeShone Kizer in Cleveland in London. So it turned out that schedule was just pretty easy. And then they got a really big win against the Los Angeles Rams in that game here. But even then, you didn't go into the Los Angeles Rams game feeling like, oh, yeah, they're definitely going to win today. And now we're starting to have that feeling about the Twins, which the next level of that is, how can you make this a juggernaut? From they're really good, but there are some players who are overachieving, most notably Jake Odorizzi and Martin Perez. I mean, these guys are playing way above their heads. The bullpen has been incredible, and there's a number of hitters who still are around 1,000 OPS, and it's just hard to see all these things going right for an entire season. So we spend a lot of time talking about who could they add, and we're getting to that point where even if you feel like you're a little ahead of schedule, if you've got a chance to win, then you've got to do everything you can to win baseball games. And Craig Kimbrell has been talked about a lot, and you found another potential trade idea that is under the label of not so crazy summer trade ideas.
Yeah.
So this, if you think it's crazy, they have already declared it. Like, they've cut you off at the path. Like, no, it isn't. that's a great, ESPN does this with Todd McShay and his mock draft, like, way too early. Don't get mad. Instead of just 2020 mock draft, we acknowledge this is too early. And if Mitch Leidner is a first round pick in this mock draft, it doesn't count.
Right.
Like, you can't come back. And of course, people do anyway. Yeah. I felt bad for McShay with that thing. Now, I get where he was coming from. with Leidner because he's a really exceptional athlete, and maybe somebody told him, like, hey, this is a guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And he just threw it out there, and then he just gets hammered over and over again. And McShay has said it's his least favorite thing to do. But I always love headlines that try to keep you from getting too upset. This is great. Not so crazy ideas. We swear. I'll give you the idea. Who wrote this? Let me go up here. This comes from Anthony Castrovinus. Maybe
sure.
is how you pronounce it. But his first trade on MLB.com, Marcus Stroman to the Minnesota Twins. When we were talking about the Bumgarner idea with Derek Wetmore the other day, he said, hey, look, you know, there are other guys who are going to be on this list that will come up as teams start to really fall out of the race.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pull the trigger on Madison Bumgarner now. You don't have to go crazy and overpay Dallas Keuchel now. You can wait and see. And Marcus Stroman is an exceptional pitcher on a team that is totally rebuilding. They are a complete mess, the Toronto Blue Jays, and they're like 5 years away from being any good. They're doing the whole tear down and try to build themselves back up thing. Stroman has a 2.95 ERA. Interestingly enough, this is where the analytics or just the underlying stats will shape how I think about things. Stroman's regular ERA from last year doesn't look good at all. But when you look at his FIP, the fielding independent pitching, which is supposed to give you an idea of the strikeouts, walks, and home runs, trying to take the fielding out of it.
Right.
It has been consistent through his whole career. It's just last year, nobody fielded the ball for him. And remember, years before, they had really good fielding when Tulowitzki was there and so forth. Anyhow, 2.95 ERA this year. He's young. He's only 27 years old. And his contract is pretty favorable. It would be kind of like a Chris Archer situation with Chris Archer being traded to the Pirates last year. It would be kind of that with the Twins. But the problem is that the writer here for MLB.com mentions two names that I'm just not okay with giving away. Mm-hmm. Royce Lewis and Alex Kirilov. I just got to go with a no. Like, no matter who it is, I can't give up Royce Lewis. And one of the reasons for me is, I mean, of course, he's number one overall pick, so that's huge. But a lot of number one overall picks don't work out. The videos that I've seen of him and his swing and his maturity and the position he plays, like this guy can be similar to what Correa has brought to the Astros for the Twins. And that's way too exciting to, or Alex Bregman, what he's brought to the Astros. Like, that's way too exciting of an idea to give away for a pitcher who I think is really good, but not the next Clayton Kershaw. The price, if it's Royce Lewis, is just a little bit too much for me. But the idea of trading for Stroman, if you play out this rotation, and let's say that bumps Pineda out of it, I mean, you're talking about Kyle Gibson all of a sudden as a 4 or 5 starter for this team. Barrios, Stroman, Odorizzi, Perez, and Gibson? I mean, that, and going into a playoff series to have Stroman, Barrios, Odorizzi as your three guys, like, you would feel really, really good about that. And you know what excites me the most, Jonathan, is just that this is a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we're at right now, is the Twins are in every single buyer article, every single trade idea, and Noah Syndergaard's name comes up in this article as well, and he's another guy that they could have a conversation about. Like, again, how long has it been?
Right. Even 2 years ago when they were good and they were fighting for that last wild card spot, it was, maybe they should be sellers at the deadline. Maybe they should just give up on the season and sell. Now it's, no, they're going to buy. They're going to be buyers, and they have to be buyers.
Yeah, that's just, we have not been in this position in quite some time. It's been, you know, should they sell? Should they buy? Remember the last 2 years in a row, Brian Dozier was mad.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve credit for that one, by the way. I mean, when we were talking about Brian Dozier and he was, making it seem like he was victimized by the Twins front office of not coming to him with a contract extension. And looking at his previous years, I think a lot of us, including me, were like, well, okay, he's not going to hit 42 every year, but through those three prime years of 28, 29, 30, he was really good. I mean, 28, 42, 34 home runs and OPSs in the 800s. Like, this guy was got a couple of MVP votes. I mean, it's like he was really, really good through those years. And this front office said, you know, it's probably not going to keep that up just by looking at the age. And so far this year for Brian Dozier, 45 games, he's hitting 205 with a 305 on base, 655 OPS, and six home runs. I mean, just not very good at all. So seeing the writing on the wall there of saying this guy's going to be 32 and we've got other players coming along, there's no reason to sign him to a big extension, was a really good call by this front office. So, but I love being in the position as we approach Memorial Day to be able to talk trades almost every day on the show. We're going to be able to dig up some new article talking about who the Twins should trade for. Like, I can't think of when the last time this was that this really happened where you were talking about top names that were connected to the Twins. That's pretty fun. So good find by you, Jonathan, on MLB.com. You can see the article there. If you want to chime in on Twins trades, would you give up Royce Lewis? That is a flat no for me. 651-646-8255, because I expect this team to be good for a long time, not just this year. This isn't a go all in and go for it year, even though I would like to see them, you know, make a concerted effort to get better as we go along through the summer. So 651-646-8255 is the number. Couple more things coming up on the show. Charles Barkley said the Blazers were going to make it to the NBA Finals. So I want to ask Jonathan what his worst sports opinion ever was, which was blew up in his face. So you can think of that for yourself. Also, a little bit of hockey, Blues and Bruins potentially. Are you into that at all? And OTAs, they're beginning. And I have things to watch for OTAs and some NFL stories coming up next here on Score North Live.